A logo appears. In black and white film, clouds drift above a painting of a snow-capped mountain. White stars encircle its peak and surround a title, a Paramount picture. Now credits appear over a stone carving, presenting Gregory Peck as Joe Bradley and introducing Audrey Hepburn as Princess Anne in William Wyler's production, Roman Holiday. Copyright 1953 by Paramount Pictures Corporation, all rights reserved. Now, an aerial view of St. Peter's Square and a photo montage of ancient Roman arches and monuments. More titles, with Eddie Albert, Hartley Power, Harcourt Williams, Margaret Rawlings, Tullio Carminati, Paolo Carlini, Claudio Ermelli, Paola Borboni, Alfredo Rizzo, Laura Solari, and Gorella Gori. Screenplay by Ian McClellan Hunter and John Dighton. Story by Ian McClellan Hunter. This film was photographed and recorded in its entirety in Rome, Italy. Directors of photography, Frank F. Planer, ASC, and Henry Alacan. Art directors, Hal Pereira and Walter Tyler. Edited by Robert Swink, ACE. Costumes by Edith Head. Assistant directors, Herbert Coleman and Piero Musetta. Makeup supervision, Wally Westmore and Alberto De Rossi. Sound recording by Joseph De Bretagne. IATSE Insignia, Western Electric Recording, approved MPAA Certificate 16114, certified and passed by the National Board of Review. Filmed at Cinecittà Studios in Rome, Italy. Associate producer Robert Wyler, music score by Georges Auric, produced and directed by William Wyler. Now, a newsreel.
Paramount News brings you a special coverage of Princess Anne's visit to London, the first stop on her much-publicized goodwill tour of European capitals. She gets a royal welcome from the British as thousands cheer the gracious young member of one of Europe's oldest ruling families. After 3 days of continuous activity and a visit to Buckingham Palace, Anne flew to Amsterdam, where Her Royal Highness dedicated the new International Aid Building and christened an ocean liner. Then went to Paris, where she attended many official functions designed to cement trade relations between her country and the Western European nations. And so to Rome, the Eternal City, where the princess visit was marked by a spectacular military parade highlighted by the band of the crack Bersaglieri Regiment. The smiling young princess showed no sign of the strain of the week's continuous public appearances. And at her country's embassy that evening, a formal reception and ball in her honor was given by her country's ambassador to Italy.
Inside the embassy. At the reception, women dressed in elegant glittering evening gowns mingle with men in tuxedos and formal military uniforms. The crowd parts as the stout master of ceremonies addresses them.
Sua Altezza Reale, Her Royal Highness.
Princess Anne steps gracefully toward the crowd, escorted by a white-haired ambassador. She wears a floor-length white gown and long white gloves. A diamond necklace accentuates her soft, bare shoulders and slender neck. As she walks past her guests, the women curtsy and the men bow. Wearing a faint, formal smile, Anne nods to them. A jeweled tiara adorns her dark hair, which is worn up in a crown-like braid. The princess gathers her billowing skirt in both hands and steps onto a platform. As she begins to sit, her escort gently lays a hand on her arm. She remains standing for a receiving line.
His Excellency the Papal Nunzio, Monsignor Altomonte.
Eccellenza, piacere di conoscerla.
Grazie della bontà di vostra Altezza Reale.
Sir Hugo Massey de Farmington.
Good evening, Sir Hugo.
Good evening, Your Royal Highness.
His Highness the Maharaja of Khanipur and the Rajkumari.
I'm so glad that you could come.
Thank you, madam.
Friherre Erika of Messingschöne Berienschön.
Under the train Pardon? Of her dress, we see Anne Prince slide her Ishvar aching foot out of her high heel.
Nojvarod.
How do you do?
Ihre Hoheit, der Fürst und die Fürstin von und zu Lichtenstichenholz.
Guten Abend. Freut mich sehr.
S- Sahari Singh and Karak Singh.
She removes her foot again.
The Count and Countess von Marstrand.
Good evening, Countess. Good evening.
Standing on one heel, she stumbles as she shakes the Count's hand. Her gown hides the shoe.
Signore, Signora Joan de Camoche.
Good evening.
She tries to slip on her overturned shoe.
Hassan el-Din Pasha.
How do you do?
The sharp-dressed man salutes and bows. Anne smiles at the guests as she pushes the shoe farther away, trying to put it on. She tightens her jaw, glances around the room, then sits. Her right shoe lies exposed on the platform. Anne peeks down, adjusts her gloves, and fidgets, reaching for the shoe with her foot. Behind her, a bald general stares goggle-eyed at the shoe, then looks at a countess seated beside Anne. The countess's eyes grow wide with panic as she notices the shoe. A dark-haired assistant lightly taps the ambassador on the shoulder and directs his eyes to the platform. The ambassador glances rapidly around, bows to Anne, inviting her to dance, then spots the shoe. She looks at it, sighs, then rises. Taking his hand, she gracefully slips on her shoe, steps off the platform, and waltzes with him. The ambassador checks the empty platform as he spins Anne around. Holding the skirt of her gown in one hand, Anne dances elegantly across the floor with the ambassador. Later, Anne follows the offbeat lead of a squat man. Later still, she stares respectfully at the ground as she dances with an elderly official. Solemnly, she waltzes awkwardly with an intense young man with owlish eyes. Later, Anne stands on her bed, brushing her long hair.
I hate this nightgown. I hate all my nightgowns, and I hate all my underwear, too.
My dear, you have lovely things.
But I'm not 200 years old. Why can't I sleep in pajamas?
Pajamas?
Just the top part.
Shocked, the Countess removes her glasses.
Did you know there are people who sleep with absolutely nothing on at all?
I rejoice to say that I did not.
Listen.
Anne springs out of bed and rushes to the window.
Oh, and your slip.
Anne stares down through the trees at a local dance.
Please put on your slippers and come away from the window.
Pouting, she climbs into bed. The Countess closes the window and brings Anne a tray.
Your milk and crackers.
Everything we do is so wholesome.
They'll help you to sleep.
Tired to sleep. Can't sleep a wink.
Now, my dear, if you don't mind, tomorrow's schedule, or schedule, whichever you prefer, both are correct. 8:30, breakfast here with the embassy staff. 9:00, we leave for the Polinari Automotive Works, where you'll be presented with a small car.
Thank you.
Which you will not accept.
No, thank you.
10:35, inspection of Food and Agriculture Organization will present you with an olive tree.
No, thank you.
Which you will accept.
Thank you.
10:55, the new foundling home for orphans. You will preside over the laying of the cornerstone, same speech as last Monday.
Trade relations.
Yes.
For the orphans?
Oh, no, the other one.
Youth and progress.
Precisely. 11:45, back here to rest. No, that's wrong. 11:45, conference here with the press.
Sweetness and decency.
1:00 sharp, lunch with the foreign ministry. You will wear your white lace and carry a bouquet of
very small pink roses.
3:05, presentation of a plaque.
Thank you.
4:10, review special guard of Carabinieri Police.
No, thank you.
4:45, back
do?
Here to change Charm. Your uniform
so
to meet the international...
No!
Good day!
No!
It's all right, dear.
It
didn't spill.
I don't give it spilled or not. I don't give I drowned in it.
My dear, you're ill. I'll send for Dr. Bonacove.
I don't want Dr. Bonacove. Please let me die in peace.
You're not dying.
Leave me. Leave me.
It's nerves. Control yourself, Anne.
I don't want to.
Your Highness. I'll get Dr. Bonacieux.
It's no use. I'll be dead before he gets here.
She buries her head in her pillow. Later, the Countess enters with the doctor and the general.
She is asleep.
She was in hysterics 3 minutes ago, Doctor.
Are you asleep, ma'am?
No.
He takes her temperature.
I'll only disturb your Royal Highness a moment, huh?
I'm very ashamed, Dr. Bonacieux. Suddenly I was crying.
To cry? A perfectly normal thing to do.
It's most important she be calm and relaxed for the press conference, Doctor.
Don't worry, Doctor. I'll be calm and relaxed. I'll bow and I'll smile. I'll improve trade relations and I will.
There she goes again. Give her something, Doctor, please.
No.
Uncover her arm, please.
The doctor fills a syringe.
What's that?
Sleep and calm. This will relax you and make your Highness feel a little happy. It's a new drug, quite harmless.
He gives Anne a shot. The general faints.
There.
I don't feel any different.
You will. It may take a little time to take hold. Just now, lie back. Huh?
Can I keep just one light on?
Of course. Best thing I know is to do exactly what you wish for a while.
Thank you, Doctor.
Oh, the General! Doctor, quick!
Oh!
They help the general to his feet.
I'm perfectly all right. Good night, ma'am.
The general leaves.
Good night, ma'am.
Good night, Doctor.
Dr. Bonacieux motions the Countess out of the room. She looks back at Anne, turns off the light, then closes the bedroom door. Lying on her back, Anne breathes deeply. She opens her eyes wide and stares curiously around the room, fixing her gaze on figures ornately carved in the ceiling. She twists her head to the side and musingly stares up at three cherubs carved on the headboard. Slowly dropping her eyes, she looks to the window through her tears. Suddenly, she tosses the covers back, runs to the window, and longingly watches the dance through the trees. Sighing, she looks out at Rome's shimmering domed skyline. She stares pensively down at the dance, then looks mischievously to the closed bedroom door. Eyes wide, she dashes to the closet and ruffles through her clothes. Changed into a white blouse and a flared skirt, she hurries to the door, opens it slowly, and peeks into the hall where a guard sleeps. Carefully, she closes the door and looks around her room. She climbs out the window onto a ledge, presses her body flat against the wall, and inches by a column. She jumps onto a nearby balcony. Glancing around, she sneaks past a balloon curtain and steps lightly down a corridor decorated with gilt antiques. Anne stops, startled by her reflection in a mirror. Craning her neck, she tiptoes into a second-story mezzanine that overlooks the first floor and peers down over the railing. She dashes down the hallway. She stops. Creeping down the hall, she looks over her shoulder, then runs. She hops quickly down a staircase. Outside, Anne races down a narrow, dimly lit alley. As she disappears, a man strolls around the corner. She sprints through a stone courtyard and rests against a wall. Looking around the corner, she sees a young man hop out of his small catering truck and head toward the embassy. Anne runs to the truck, climbs into the back, and ducks behind a stack of supplies. The man returns with two bags of linens, which he tosses into the back. He closes the tailgate, locks it, then gets into the cab of the three-wheeled truck. Grabbing the handlebars, he kickstarts it. He shifts into gear and drives off down the embassy driveway. Two embassy guards open the enormous wrought iron front gates. The truck passes through and turns onto the street. Anne peeks over the bag of linens, watches the guards close the gates, and smiles with glee as they drive away. She moves the bag and sits on it, resting her chin on her hand as she stares out the tailgate. They pass a busy sidewalk cafe. She watches a young couple on a motor scooter follow behind, then smiles and waves. The beaming young woman waves back. Anne leans against a wobbling crate and closes her tiring eyes. Later, the truck speeds around a piazza with a fountain in the center. Anne sleeps in the back as the truck stops for two strolling lovers. Anne wakes up, glances around, then hops out the back. The truck speeds away. Anne dashes out of the street and leans against a tree. A trolley passes by. Anne yawns. She crosses the street, climbs into a horse-drawn carriage, and steps around a couple. The woman helps her down and shrugs her shoulders. She passes beneath a window. Inside, seven men play poker. A handsome, dark-haired man deals.
Bet 500.
500. How many?
One.
The dealer eyes a bearded man suspiciously.
I'll take one.
Three.
Foolish boy.
The dealer glances at his cards, then adds his bet.
Two for Papa.
500 more.
Without looking.
500 and raise 1,000.
The bearded man strokes his chin and throws money onto the table. The dealer shoots him a dubious glance, then meets his bet.
Two pairs.
Oh, well, I got three shy little sevens.
A nervous straight. Come home, you fools.
The bearded man rakes in the lira.
6,500. Hey, not bad. That's $10. One more round, and I'm going to throw you gents right out in the snow.
Say, what are you
doing? I got to get up early. Date with Her Royal Highness will graciously pose for some pictures.
What do you mean, early? My personal invitation says 11:45.
Couldn't be anything to do with the fact that you're ahead.
It could.
Well, it works out fine for me. This is my last 5,000. And you hyenas are not going to get it. Thanks a lot, Irving. Yeah, see you at Annie's little party in the morning.
Ciao, Joe.
Yeah, ciao.
Good night, Joe.
Stay sober.
All right, little seven-card stud.
Okay, with me.
Joe leaves. Later on the street, he ambles with his hands in his pockets past the ruins of the Forum. He notices Anne lying on a stone bench.
So happy.
Joe stops and stares.
How are you this evening?
He stops her from rolling off the bench.
Hey, wake up.
Thank you very much, delighted. No, thank you. John.
Eyes close. She holds out her hand. Joe shakes it.
Charmed, too.
Lying on her back, she looks up at him.
You may sit down.
I think you better sit up. Much too young to get picked up by the police.
Police?
Yep, police.
2:15 and back here to change. 2:45.
You know, people who can't handle liquor shouldn't drink it.
If I were dead and buried and I heard your voice, beneath the sod my heart of dust would still rejoice. Do you know that poem?
Huh. What do you know? You're well read. well-dressed. She's snoozing away in a public street. Does she care to make a statement?
What the world needs is a return to sweetness and decency in the souls of its young men.
She closes her eyes and drops her head onto Joe's shoulder. He moves his money to his side pocket.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with him more, but...
He flags a taxi and nudges Anne into an upright posture. She shakes her head groggily.
Get yourself some coffee. You'll be all right.
He pats Anne on the shoulder, then heads to the waiting cab. Opening the door, he sees Anne slump onto the bench. The scruffy-faced driver watches her. Leaning against the open door, Joe breathes deeply, strokes his chin, and glances at the driver, who rolls his eyes. Joe goes to the bench and taps Anne's arm.
Look, you take the cab.
He looks to the taxi. The driver sighs and slouches. Grasping her arm, Joe pulls Anne to her feet.
Come on. Climb in the cab and go home.
So happy.
You got any money?
Never carry money.
That's a bad habit. All right. I'll drop you off. Come on.
It's a taxi.
Well, it's not the super chief.
They duck into the back seat.
Dove andiamo? Where are we going?
Where do you live?
Coliseum.
Now, come on, you're not that drunk.
You're so smart, I'm not drunk at all. I'm just being very happy.
Now, don't go to sleep again. Come on.
Per favore, signora, detto, dove andiamo? Where are we going?
Lo dirò in un momento, dove fermare.
Okay.
Look, now, where do you want to go? Where shall I take you?
He shakes her chin.
Where do you live? Come on. Where do you live?
He pats her cheek.
Come on, where do you live?
Colosseum.
She lives in the Colosseum.
It's wrong address. Now look, signore, for me it is very late tonight. Mia moglie, wife, I have three bambino. You know bambino? My taxi go home, I go home together. Signore, excuse me. Via Marguta 51. Oh, molto bene.
They drive off. Later, Anne sleeps in the back seat as the taxi pulls up to a two-story stone building.
Yes, Via Marguta 51, 51. I am very happy. 1,000 lire. 1,000 lire.
1,000.
Joe digs in his breast pocket, looks suspiciously at Anne, then pulls his bill from his side pocket.
5,000.
1,000, 2,000, 4,000.
Okay. 1,000 per te.
For me?
Si.
Oh, grazie mille.
Okay. Look, take a little bit of that. Take her wherever she wants to go. Capito? Capito. Buonanotte.
Good night. Buonanotte.
Joe climbs out.
Oh, no, moment. No.
All right. Look, as soon as she wakes up, yeah. See? She tell you where she want to go. Okay.
Moment. My taxi is not for sleep. My taxi, no sleep. Understand? You understand?
Look, pal.
Yes.
This is not my problem, see? I never see her before. Huh?
Okay. It's not your problem. It's not my problem. What you want? You don't want girl, yeah? Me don't want girl. Police. Maybe she want girl.
Stay calm. Okay. Va bene.
Joe drags her out of the cab. He climbs a flight of stairs, his hands in his pockets. Anne staggers behind him and follows him through a garden courtyard. While Joe bends forward to unlock a door, Anne leans against his back, dozing. Standing up straight, he rights her. Anne totters, her eyes closed. She shuffles behind him into an inner courtyard. Holding her hand, Joe leads her up a modest spiral staircase. Anne misses the staircase and walks around it. Twirling her around, he backs down, guides Anne to the staircase, and leads her up the stairs. As he unlocks his door, Anne turns to the neighbor's door, her hand raised. Joe quickly grabs her knocking hand. Towing her toward him, Joe unlocks his apartment door and enters a dark room. He turns on the light.
Out of my head, exactly.
Anne glances around the small room.
Is this the elevator?
It's my room.
Anne stumbles to the small bed.
I'm terribly sorry to mention it, but the dizziness is getting worse. Can I sleep here?
That's the general idea.
Can I have a silk nightgown with rosebuds on it?
Joe goes to his closet.
I'm afraid you'll have to rough it tonight. In these.
Pajamas.
Sorry, honey, but I haven't worn a nightgown in years.
Will you help me get undressed, please?
She closes her eyes and waits. Joe looks at her trim young figure.
Okay.
Joe rubs his nose, peeps at her neck, then unties her bow. Gently swaying back and forth, Anne stares at him.
There you are. You can handle the rest.
He passes her the bow. Crossing the room, he glances back at her, then pours himself a drink. He swigs a shot.
May I have some?
No. Now look.
This is very unusual. I've never been alone with a man before, even with my dress on. With my dress off, it's most unusual. I don't seem to mind. Do you?
She looks up at him.
I think I'll go out for a cup of coffee. You better get to sleep.
She sits on the bed.
No, no, no. On this one.
Terribly nice.
He leads her to a small couch.
These are pajamas. They're to sleep in. You're to climb into them. You understand?
Thank you.
Then you do your sleeping on the couch, see? Not on the bed. Not on the chair. On the couch. Is that clear?
You know my favorite poem.
You already recited that for me.
Arethusa rose from a couch of snows in the Acroceraunian mountains. Keats.
Shelley. Keats. You just keep your mind off the poetry and on the pajamas. Everything will be all right, see?
It's Keats.
It's Shelley. I'll be back in about 10 minutes.
Keats.
He grabs the liquor bottle, looks back at Anne, then hides it on a shelf. As she turns, her skirt falls down.
You have my permission to withdraw.
Thank you very much.
He leaves. Now, at the embassy, a uniformed officer meets with Anne's entourage, who wear dressing gowns.
Well? No trace, Your Excellency.
Have you searched the grounds?
Every inch, sir, from the attics to the cellar.
I must put you on your honor not to speak of this to anyone. I must remind you that the princess is the direct heir to the throne. This must be classified as top crisis secret. Have I your pledge?
Yes, sir.
Very well.
The officer leaves.
Now we must notify their majesties.
Their eyes wide, the Countess and the General look fretfully at one another. Later, Joe enters his courtyard and climbs the spiral staircase. He unlocks the door and sees Anne wearing his striped pajamas curled up in his bed.
Huh? Oh.
Frowning, he hangs his hands on his hips. He starts to close the door, stares at Anne, then shoves it closed. She doesn't flinch. Joe looks around the room, then walks to the opposite side of the bed and slides the nightstand away. He pushes the small couch next to the bed. He takes off his jacket and hangs it on the back of a chair. Loosening his tie, Joe steps to the side of the bed, puts his hands on his hips, then pulls the bottom pillow out from under Anne's head. He tosses it to the couch. Putting his foot on the edge of the bed, he grabs the bottom sheet with two hands, looks up, then yanks the sheet, rolling Anne onto the couch. Still sleeping, Anne curls up and nestles her head in the pillow.
So happy.
The pleasure's mine.
Joe puffs his pillow.
Screwball.
Now, an operator's hands work a teletype machine. The newsflash types out on another machine. A special embassy bulletin reports the sudden illness of Her Royal Highness, the Princess Anne. Now, a clock tower strikes noon. Sunlight beams through the curtains in Joe's apartment. In bed, Joe stretches his legs and rubs his face. Opening his eyes, he rolls over and looks quizzically at Anne's bare foot hanging off the couch. He stares in a daze, then bolts upright. He looks at his alarm clock, then shakes it.
Holy smoke, the prince's interview. 11:45.
Joe jumps out of bed, runs to the window, and looks at the time on the clock tower. He grabs his tie and opens the closet. Reaching into his suit coat pocket, he shoots a dark glance at Anne, counts his money, and puts it back. Now, a bald man paces in his office at the American News Service. Lettering on the office window reads, "All the news, all the time." The bald editor sees Joe get out of a taxi, then sits at his desk and reads a newspaper. The front page of the Rome Daily American headlines, "Princess Anne taken ill, press interview canceled." Joe enters the news service.
Hi, Joe.
Good morning, Joe.
Hello, honey.
Joe glides to the secretary's desk and sips her coffee.
Mr. Hennessy has been looking for you.
Uh-oh.
He tears off a piece of her pastry.
Excellent, hon.
Come in.
Joe exchanges a nervous glance with the secretary. Eating the pastry, he enters his editor's office.
You've been looking for me?
Just coming to work.
Who, me?
We start our days at 8:30 in this office. We pick up our assignments.
I picked mine up last night.
What assignment was that?
The Princess, 11:45.
Hennessy's mouth hangs open.
You've already been to the interview?
Oh, sure, I just got back.
Well, well, well. All my apologies.
It's all right.
This is very interesting.
No, just routine.
Tell me, did she answer all the questions on the list?
Well, of course she did. I've got them right here somewhere.
Don't disturb yourself. I have a copy here. How did Her Highness react to the idea of a European Federation?
She thought it was just fine.
She did?
Well, she thought that there'd be two effects.
Two?
The direct and the indirect.
Oh, remarkable.
Naturally, she felt that the indirect would not be as direct as the direct. That is, not right away.
No.
Later on, of course, well, nobody knows.
Well. That was a shrewd observation. They fooled you, you know, these royal kids. They've got a lot more on the ball than we suspect. How did she feel about the future friendship of nations?
Youth.
Yeah.
She felt that the youth of the world must lead the way to a better world.
Mm-hmm. Original. By the way, what was she wearing?
Oh, you mean what did she have on?
Well, that's usually what it means.
Joe tugs his collar.
What's the matter? Is it a little warm in here for you?
No. I just hurried over here.
Oh, naturally, with a story of these dimensions. Did you say she was wearing gray?
No, I didn't say that.
Well, she usually wears gray.
Oh, well, it was a kind of a gray.
Oh, I think I know the dress you mean. It has a gold collar.
That's the one. Yeah, I didn't know exactly how to describe it, but that's it.
I think you described it very well. In view of the fact that Her Highness was taken violently ill at 3:00 this morning, put to bed with a high fever, and has had all her appointments for today cancelled in toto.
toto.
Yes, Mr. Bradley, in toto.
Joe gulps.
Certainly pretty hard to swallow.
In view of the fact that you just left her, of course. But here it is, Mr. Bradley. All over the front page of every newspaper in Rome.
All right, all right. I overslept. It can happen to anybody.
If you ever get up early enough to read a morning paper, you might discover little news events, little items of general interest that might prevent you in the future from getting immersed in such a gold-plated, triple-deck, star-spangled lie as you have just told me. If I were you, I would try some other line of business, like mattress testing.
Is this the princess?
Yes, Mr. Bradley, that is the princess. It isn't Annie Oakley, Dorothy L'Amour, or Madame Chiang Kai-shek. Take a good look at her. You might be interviewing her again someday.
Am I fired?
No, you're not fired. When I want to fire you, you won't have to ask. You'll know you're fired.
Joe dashes out of Hennessy's office.
The man's mad.
In the outer office, Joe spins in a circle, glances around, then enters a small room. Newspaper in hand, he closes the door and runs to a phone. Looking over his shoulder, he dials. His alert eyes follow a passing man out of the room. Now, an older local man wearing a cap and suspenders picks up a phone.
Pronto?
It's Joe Bradley. Now, listen carefully. I want you to hurry up to my place and see if there's somebody there, asleep.
Ah, see, Mr. Joe. I look, subito. You wait. Aspetta.
Joe's landlord sets the phone on his desk, grabs a key, and leaves. At the news service, Joe holds the phone, pacing nervously. He rubs his furrowed brow and leans against the wall, fidgeting. Now his landlord returns to his office, smiling, and picks up the phone.
Mr. Joe?
Yeah. Tell me.
Bellissima.
Giovanni, I love you. Now listen.
Yes, Mr. Joe.
Giovanni's eyes widen.
A gun? No.
Yes, a gun, a knife, anything. But nobody goes in and nobody goes out. Capito?
Okay.
Giovanni hangs up the phone and rubs his chin. Now, Joe stuffs the newspaper in his coat pocket, enters the outer office, and walks past the secretary into Hennessy's office.
You still here?
How much would a real interview with this dame be worth?
Are you referring to Her Highness?
I'm not referring to Annie Oakley, Dorothy L'Amour, Madame... How much?
What do you care? You got about as much chance of getting...
I know, but if I did, how much would it be worth?
Oh, just a plain talk on world conditions might be worth 250. Her views on clothes, of course, will be worth a lot more. Maybe $1,000.
Dollars.
Dollars.
I'm talking about her views on everything.
Huh?
The private and secret longings of a princess. Her innermost thoughts, as revealed to your Rome correspondent in a private, personal, exclusive interview.
Hennessy gapes.
Can't use it, huh? I didn't think you'd like it.
Joe goes to the door, stays inside, and slams it.
Come here.
He walks back and leans against the desk.
Love angle, too, I suppose.
Practically all love angle.
With pictures.
Could be. How much?
That particular story would be worth $5,000 to any news service. But tell me, Mr. Bradley, if you are sober, just how you are going to obtain this fantastic interview?
I plan to enter her sick room disguised as a thermometer. You said $5,000? I want you to shake on that.
They shake hands.
You realize, of course, Her Highness is in bed today and leaves for Athens tomorrow.
Yep.
Now, I'd like to make a little side bet with you. 500 says you don't come up with the story.
Joe moves away, pulls the newspaper out of his pocket, and stares at the princess's picture.
What are you looking at that for?
I just want to see what time it is.
Huh?
What day it is. It's a deal.
Now I'd like you to shake.
Joe grips his hand firmly.
Let's see, you're into me for about 500 now. When you lose this bet, you'll owe me 1,000. Why, you poor sucker, I'll practically own you.
You have practically owned me for a couple of years now, but that's all over. I'm going to win that money, and with it, I'm going to buy me a one-way ticket back to New York.
Go on, Joel. I love to hear you whine.
And when I'm back in a real newsroom, I'll enjoy thinking about you sitting here with an empty leash in your hands and nobody to twitch for you.
So long.
Joe leaves. Later, outside Joe's apartment, Giovanni paces like a soldier with a shotgun slung over his shoulder. On the spiral staircase, young boys wave their toy guns at him. Giovanni waves them away. Joe arrives. Smiling, he steps over the boys huddled on the stairs and taps one on the head with the newspaper.
Signor Bradley.
Everything okay, Giovanni?
Signor Joe, nobody has come, nobody has go, absolutely nobody.
Swell, thanks a lot. Oh, Giovanni,
He puts his arm around Giovanni.
How would you like to make some money?
Money? My God.
That's the stuff. Now look, I've got a sure thing. Double your money back in 2 days.
Double my money?
Yeah, well, I need a little investment capital to swing the deal. Now, if you'll just lend me a little cash,
Ma sei son scemo? You owing me 2 months rent? And you want me to lend you money? No, certamente no.
Tomorrow, you'll be sorry.
Joe points the newspaper at Giovanni, tucks it under his arm, then opens his apartment door. Anne lies sound asleep on the tiny couch. Checking behind him, he carefully closes the door and slides the chain lock into place. He looks at Anne curled up on her side with her back to him, then tiptoes to the foot of the couch. Inching toward her, he holds up the newspaper and bends over to get a closer look. Her hand partly obscures her face. Studying her smooth profile, Joe sits down next to her and pulls a long strand of hair away from her face. Anne scratches her ear without waking. Holding the newspaper photo of the elegant Princess Anne next to her face, Joe peers closely. Her hand covers her straight, small nose. He gently tickles the palm of her hand. Anne stirs.
Your Highness? Your Royal Highness?
Yes, what is it?
Anne rolls over with her eyes closed. Joe sits up, his mouth half open. He raises an eyebrow as he watches Anne sleep. Stuffing the newspaper into his suit coat pocket, he gets up and walks to his messy, unmade bed. He picks up the alarm clock, sets it on a shelf, then pulls off a rumpled blanket and tosses it over the footboard. He moves the pillow to the head of the bed, fluffs it, and then, sliding his hands across the mattress, smooths the wrinkles out of the bottom sheet. Looking from Anne to the bed, Joe steps back to the couch. He leans over, puts her limp arm around his shoulder, and sliding his hands beneath her back and legs, gently picks her up. Her head falls against his shoulder as he carries her toward the bed. Holding her over the bed with her head at the foot, Joe frowns at the pillow inconveniently located at her feet. Startled, he looks up. Anne sleeps in his arms as he quickly moves the pillow to the foot of the bed, lays her down, then dashes to the window overlooking the street. He sees 2 Italian police jeeps speed by. Taking a deep breath, he pulls the curtains closed and steps lightly back to the bed.
Dr. Bonacone.
Oh, sure, yes. Well, Oh, you're fine. Much better. Is there anything you want?
So many things.
Yes? Well, tell the doctor. Tell the good doctor everything.
I dreamt.
Yes? Well, what did you dream?
He takes her pulse.
I dreamt I was asleep in the street and a young man came. He was tall and strong and he was so mean to me.
He was.
He sets her wrist down. Smiling, she flaps her arm over her face.
It was wonderful.
Joe's dark eyes shift. Anne moves her arm away from her face. Her eyelids flutter as she stretches her neck and twists her head. Blinking awake, her clear, almondine eyes focus on pipes hanging from the ceiling. She turns to Joe. She closes her eyes and smiles. As she awakens more fully, she frowns at Joe, who looks at her with a sly grin.
Good morning.
Anne shudders.
Where's Dr. Bonnikoven?
Afraid I don't know anybody by that name.
Wasn't I talking to him just now?
Afraid not.
Have I had an accident?
No.
It's quite safe for me to sit up, huh?
Oh, perfect.
Joe reaches behind Anne, stands up her pillow, then helps her sit up. Staring at him, she pulls the covers up to her neck.
Thank you.
Joe nods and leans against the wall. Hugging the covers to her chest, Anne glances around the room, then looks at the striped pajama shirt she's wearing.
Are these yours?
Joe raises his eyebrows and nods. Anne's eyes grow wide. She reaches under the covers.
Did you lose something?
No. Would you be so kind as to tell me where I am?
Well, this is what is laughingly known as my apartment.
Did you bring me here by force?
No. Quite the contrary.
Have I been here all night alone?
If you don't count me, yes.
So I've spent the night here. With you?
Oh, well, now, I don't know that I'd use those words exactly. But, from a certain angle. Yes.
Anne looks down, squeezing the covers tight to her chest. A wide smile spreads across her face, and she shakes Joe's hand.
How do you do?
How do you do?
And you, are...
Bradley, Joe Bradley. Oh,
delighted.
You don't know how delighted I am to meet you.
You may sit down.
Thank you very much.
He sits on the end of the bed, and she quickly pulls her knees to her chest.
What's your name?
You may call me Anya.
Well, thank you. Anya, would you like a cup of coffee?
What time is it?
Oh, about 1:30.
1:30? I must get dressed and go.
Why, what's your hurry? There's lots of time.
Oh, no, there isn't, and I've been quite enough trouble to you as it is.
Trouble? You're not what I'd call trouble.
I'm not.
I'll run a bath for you.
He goes into the bathroom. Anne, holding the covers over her striped pajamas, hurries to a chair and grabs her clothes. Joe sets a folded towel on the tub, then motions Anne into the bathroom.
There you are.
Holding the bundle of clothes in one hand and the covers around her with the other, Anne stares at Joe as she backs into the bathroom and shuts the door. Joe hurries to the apartment door, slides open the bolt lock, and pulls. Joe cringes as the chain lock stops the door. Scowling, he opens the chain lock, looks toward the bathroom, then leaves. He hops down the spiral stairs and runs into a sculpture studio. Joe goes to the phone and dials his bearded poker friend, who lies on the floor with a camera. A string is tied to his leg and connected to the fishing pole of a woman on the balcony.
Here we go now.
When he moves his leg, the pole bends and he snaps a picture.
There you are. That does it. All right. Give me a little slack, will you?
The bearded man picks up the phone.
Pronto?
Irving, why don't you answer the phone? Look, this is Joe. Irving, can you get over here in about 5 minutes?
Oh, no, I can't come now, Joe. I'm busy. Oh, no. Joe, I'm up to my ears in work. Go and get into your next outfit, will you, honey? The canoe. What kind of a scoop, Joe?
Look, Irving, I can't talk over the telephone. One word in the wrong quarter and this whole thing might blow sky high. It's front page stuff. That's all I can tell you. It might be political or it might be a sensational scandal. I'm not sure which, but it's a big story. It's got to have pictures.
But I can't come now, Joe. I'm busy. I'm busy now and I'm meeting Francesca at Rocca's in a half an hour and...
Now, outside Joe's apartment, a stout maid unlocks the door and enters, carrying a bucket and cleaning supplies. She drops the keys in her apron and looks at Joe's unmade bed. She takes the liquor bottle from the shelf and sets it on the side table. After sliding the curtains aside, she opens the window, then pulls up the balloon curtain and ties it off. Startled, she looks up. She barges into the bathroom. Then tries to close the door. The cleaning lady pushes the door open, then points Anne out of the bathroom. Anne scurries out, wrapped only in a towel. Wiping her face, she stares at the scolding gestures of the maid.
Capito?
Non capito. Don't understand.
Vergogna!
Later, Joe runs up the spiral stairs, then freezes when he sees the apartment door open. He looks around the courtyard, enters the apartment, and glances around the room. He sees Anne, fully dressed, outside on the patio, leaning on the railing.
There you are.
I was looking at all the people out here. It must be fun to live in a place like this.
Yeah, it has its moments. I can give you a running commentary on each apartment.
I must go. I only waited to say goodbye.
Goodbye? We've only just met. How about some breakfast?
I'm sorry, I haven't time.
Must be a pretty important date. Run off without eating.
It is.
Well, I'll go along with you, wherever you are going.
That's all right, thank you. I can find the place.
They walk inside.
Thank you for letting me sleep in your bed.
Oh, that's all right. Think nothing of it.
It was very considerate of you. You must have been awfully uncomfortable on that couch.
No. Do it all the time.
He opens the door for her and they shake hands.
Goodbye, Mr. Bradley.
Goodbye.
Anne glances around the courtyard.
Right through there and down all the steps.
Thank you.
She steps down the spiral staircase. Joe closes the door behind her, then hurries out to the patio and watches her leave through the courtyard. When she's out of sight, he runs back through his apartment and leaves to follow her. Anne climbs down the stairs toward the street, then turns around and runs back up. Joe hops down the stairs and nearly collides with her.
Well, small world.
Yeah, I almost forgot. Can you lend me some money?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, you didn't have any last night, did you?
As Joe takes the money out of his pocket, he glimpses Giovanni watching them.
How much was it that you wanted?
Well, I don't know how much I need. How much have you got?
Suppose we just split this 50-50. Here's 1,000 lire.
1,000? Can you really spare all that?
It's about $1.50.
Oh. Well, I'll arrange for it to be sent back to you. What is your address?
Via Margutta, 51.
V Via Marguta 51. Joe Bradley. Goodbye. Thank you.
She walks down the stairs, glancing back at Joe, then heads toward the street. Giovanni watches her leave, then looks at Joe. Joe shoots him a steely look, then follows Anne.
Anne, double my money, eh? You tell me why double my money
tomorrow.
Now, on a bustling city street, Anne dodges a turning scooter and smiles. Standing in the bright sunlight, she looks up and down the street as people move by. She steps aside as a three-wheeled truck passes, then joins a stream of pedestrians on the cobblestone street. Joe arrives on the street, scans the bustling crowd, then glimpses her walking away. Weaving in and out of the crowd, he hustles after her. Anne wanders through an outdoor marketplace. Standing in the marketplace, Joe surveys the throng of street vendors. Anne approaches a man holding a slithering eel. Joe strides through the marketplace, passing bins piled with fresh produce and carts stacked with clothing. With her hands in her skirt pockets, Anne studies passing shoppers. She shakes her head as a vendor tries to sell her a melon. Joe stops by the melon vendor and watches Anne try on a pair of sandals nearby. The vendor shows Joe a melon the size of a basketball. Shaking his head, he keeps an eye on Anne. Anne buys the sandals. Joe reluctantly buys the melon. Anne leaves the market and stops to look at the Trevi Fountain, a magnificent cascading pool decorated with statues and situated in front of a Roman palace. Joe watches her from behind a statue. As she strolls onto a boulevard, he lags behind, carrying his melon. She passes a salon, stops at the window, and looks at pictures of women's hairstyles. The urbane models have sleek, short cuts. Eyeing herself in a mirror, she studies her long hair pulled back in barrettes. She looks at the short hair of a woman leaving the shop, then goes in. Joe walks up. Inside, a mustached stylist looks at Anne's hair.
What a wonderful hair you have. Miss Impiega?
Just cut, thank you.
Just cut? Well, then, cut so?
An inch.
Higher?
Higher?
3 inches.
Here?
More.
6 inches.
Here?
Even more.
Where?
There.
There.
Her jawline.
Are you sure, miss?
I'm quite sure, thank you.
Scowling, he pulls her hair back.
All off.
All off.
Off.
Joe peeks into the shop, still holding the melon, then walks down the boulevard. Inside, the stylist cuts Anne's bangs chin length.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Yes. Off.
Glaring at her, he snips off 12 inches of hair and tosses it aside.
Off.
He brusquely cuts the back of her hair, then wipes his brow.
Off.
Outside, Joe waits for a payphone. He looks at his melon, then hurries to give it to a group of children playing nearby on the fountain.
Oh, no.
Now, inside the salon.
Off.
The barber sneers, then cocks his head and looks more closely at Anne's short bangs and bobbed hair. She stares at herself in the mirror. As she looks down, he pulls her head up to study her. At the fountain, Joe approaches a schoolgirl holding a camera and gently takes it out of her hands.
That's a nice little camera you have there. Ah, that's nice. You don't mind if I just borrow it, do you?
Miss Webber!
Just for a couple of minutes.
No. Go. It's my camera.
Joe tugs the camera, then stops when the teacher arrives. He pats the girl on the cheek. Then the teacher escorts her away. Now, back at the salon.
You musician, maybe. You artist, huh? Painter?
Smiling, Anne shakes her head.
I know. You modella. Model.
Thank you.
Ecco qua, finito. It's perfect.
Oh.
You be nice without long hair. Now it's cool. Hmm?
Yes.
Cool.
It's just what I wanted.
Grazie. Now, why you not come dancing tonight with me? You should see. It's so nice. It's on a boat on the Tiber, the river by Sant'Angelo. Moonlight, music, romantico. It's very, very, very. Please, you come.
I wish I could.
Oh. But your friend, I not think they recognize you.
No, I don't think they will.
Oh, thank you very much.
She pays him.
Signorina, after 9 o'clock, I'll be there. Dancing on river, remember Sant'Angelo. All my friends, if you come, you will be most pretty of all girls.
She smiles brightly.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Outside, Joe sees Anne leave the salon and follows her along the boulevard. Stopping at a shop window, she stares at her reflection and feels her short hair, curled and pulled together in back. As she walks, she looks up at the sweeping Church of the Trinity with two tall bell towers. Joe trails her. The wide stone Spanish steps, dotted with people, lead down from the church to a small pool and fountain. Joe, squinting in the bright sun, watches Anne jog across the street to a gelato vendor at the base of the steps.
Arancia, gazzosi, ginotto, gelato?
Gelato?
Gelato.
Nodding, Anne holds out money. She takes an ice cream cone.
Thank you.
She pays.
Signorina, il resto.
Oh, grazie.
The vendor gives her change. Joe watches her pass a flower vendor.
Oh, brava signorina. Guardi. Qui ci sono dei fiori per lei.
The bald vendor passes her a bouquet of flowers. Anne nods and holds out her hand. He looks at it, then shakes it.
Mille lire. 1,000 lire.
No money.
No.
No.
800 lire, va bene?
I'm sorry, I've really no money.
He holds up 7 fingers. She shows him the money from her pocket. Cocking his head, he takes the bouquet.
I'm sorry.
He pulls one flower from the bouquet and gives it to her. She tries to pay. He refuses.
Buona fortuna.
Grazie.
Joe watches as Anne sits on the wide Spanish steps, eating her ice cream. He runs up the far side of the steps and crosses a wide landing. He looks at her sitting below, scratches his head nervously, then hops down the steps next to her.
Well, it's you.
Yes, Mr. Bradley.
Or is it?
He studies her hair.
Do you like it?
Very much. So that was your mysterious appointment.
Mr. Bradley, I have a confession to make.
Confession?
Yes, I ran away last night from school.
Oh, what was the matter? Trouble with the teacher?
No, nothing like that.
Well, you don't just run away from school for nothing.
Well, I only meant it to be for an hour or two. They gave me something last night to make me sleep.
I see.
Now I better get a taxi and go back.
Well, look, before you do, why don't you take a little time for yourself?
Maybe another hour.
Live dangerously. Take the whole day.
I could do some of the things I've always wanted to.
Like what?
Oh, you can't imagine. I'd like to do just whatever I like the whole day long.
Things like having your hair cut, eating gelato.
Yes, and I'd like to sit a sidewalk cafe and look in shop windows, walk in the rain, have fun, and maybe some excitement. Doesn't seem much to you, does it?
It's great. Tell you what, why don't we do all those things together?
But don't you have to work?
Work now. Today is going to be a holiday.
But you don't want to do a lot of silly things.
He takes her hand.
Don't I? First wish, one sidewalk cafe. Coming right up. I know just the place. Rokas.
Holding her hand, he leads her down the steps. Later, they sit outside at a small table.
What'll the people at school say when they see your new haircut?
They'll have a fit. What would they say if they knew I'd spend the night in your room?
Well, I tell you what, you don't tell your folks, and I won't tell mine.
It's a pact.
Now, what would you like to drink?
Champagne, please.
Camerieri?
Comandi, signore.
Champagne?
Sì, sì.
Champagne per la signorina. And cold coffee for me.
Va bene, signore.
Must be quite a life you have in that school. Champagne for lunch.
Only on special occasions.
For instance?
The last time was my father's anniversary.
Wedding?
No, it was the 40th anniversary of the day he got his job.
40 years on the job. What do you know about that? What does he do?
Well, mostly you might call it public relations.
Oh, well, that's hard work.
Yes, I wouldn't care for it.
Does he?
I've heard him complain about it.
Why doesn't he quit?
Oh, people in that line of work almost never do quit. Unless it's actually unhealthy for them to continue.
Well, here's to his health, then.
You know, that's what everybody says.
They drink a toast.
It's all right.
Thank you. What is your work?
Oh, I'm in the selling game.
Really? How interesting. Mm-hmm. What do you sell?
Fertilizer. Chemicals, you know, chemicals. Stuff like that.
She blows the wrapper off her straw.
Well, am I glad to see you.
Why, did you forget your wallet?
Pull up a chair, Irving. Sit down with
me. So you're going to introduce me?
Yes. This is a very good friend of mine, Irving Radovich. Anya Irving.
Anya
Smith.
Oh. Hiya, Smitty.
John.
Irving sits down, glancing at Joe.
Hey, anybody ever tell you you're a dead ringer, fella?
Joe kicks him under the table, pointing to Anne.
I guess I'll be going.
Oh, no, don't do anything like that, well, Irving. Oh, sit down. Join us.
Irving sits back down.
Well, just till Francesca gets here.
Hmm? Tell me, Mr. Radovich, what is a ringer?
Oh, a waiter.
It's an American term, and it means anyone who has a great deal of charm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ciao, Irving. Ciao.
Ciao. Cousins.
Mr. Bradley's just been telling me all about his work.
I'd like to have heard that.
What do you do?
I'm in the same racket as Joe.
Joe spills his drink on Irving.
I'm awfully sorry, Irving.
I'm
sorry, Irving.
Look, I can take a hint. I'll see you around.
But your drink's just here.
Yeah, here's your drink right now, Irving. Take it easy. I'm sorry about that. Sit down. That's a good fellow.
The bearded photographer warily takes his seat.
You're twisting my arm, you know.
Just be a little more careful not to spill.
Spill? Who's been doing the spilling?
You.
Me?
Yeah.
Where did you find this loony? You're okay. Here's to you, huh? Here's hoping for the best. If
If it wasn't for that hair, I'd swear that you...
Joe kicks Irving's chair over. Two monks help him up.
Thanks.
You slipped, Irving. You slipped. You almost hurt yourself.
I slipped. I almost hurt myself. Joe, I didn't slip. Never mind, I got a bad sprain, Joe.
Go in here and get it fixed up, Carol.
Look, yeah, I'd like to
excuse us for a minute.
Yes, of course. I'm so sorry.
Joe shuffles Irving inside the bar.
Just a minute. Look, Joe, what are you trying to do? I'll take your hands off.
Have you got your lighter?
What's that got to do with it?
You got it.
Yeah, but what are you trying to do to me?
Listen, what would you do for $5,000?
$5,000?
She doesn't know who I am or what I do. Look, Irving, this is my story. I dug it up. I gotta protect it.
She's really...
Your tintypes are gonna make this little epic twice as valuable.
The princess goes slowly.
You're in for 25% of the take.
That takes 5G.
Minimum. Hennessy shook hands on it.
25%, that's $1,500.
It's $1,250.
Okay. Now you shake.
Okay, now let me get $30,000.
That's $50. You're going to buy the crown jewels?
She's out there now drinking champagne that I can't pay for. We got to entertain her, don't we?
Joe, we can't go running around town with a hot princess.
Do you want in on this deal or don't you?
Irving pulls a roll of bills from his pocket and hands Joe some money.
This I want back Saturday.
Okay. Now, where's your lighter?
Irving checks his pocket.
Let's go to work.
Joe puts his hand on Irving's shoulder and they stride outside. Sitting at the table, Anne sips her champagne.
Better now?
Huh?
Your ear.
My ear? Joe fixed it. Would you care for a cigarette?
Yes, please. You won't believe this, but it's my very first.
Your very first?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. No smoking in school.
Mm. Your first cigarette.
Irving lifts the lid to his lighter, which also is a tiny camera. He takes a picture of Anne, then lights her cigarette.
There, gizmo works.
Well, what's the verdict? Okay?
Nothing to it.
That's right, nothing to it.
Marietti.
Comandi.
Conto, per favore.
Stretch my legs a little here.
I'll pick this one up, Irving.
Yeah, you can afford it.
Well, what should we do next? Should we, make out a little schedule?
Oh, not that word, please.
Not any. Oh, I didn't mean school schedule. I meant a fun schedule.
Oh, yes. Let's just go, huh?
Well, how about you, Irving? Are you ready?
He snaps more photos.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Ciao, Irving. Come inside.
Francesca. This is...
Smitty.
Oh, she's a grand girl, Irving. Grand. $5,000, Irving. Ciao.
Hello.
Joe.
Where are you going now?
Honey, I gotta work. I'll call you tonight.
Holding hands, Joe and Anne leave. Irving kisses Francesca and runs after them. Now, at an airport, men in military uniforms wait on the tarmac as a plane, with a royal seal painted on the side, taxis to a stop. From a nearby airport window, the general and the ambassador, dressed in dark pinstripe suits, nervously gaze at the plane as men climb out. The two men stand up, move closer to the window, and watch a line of dark-suited undercover agents file stiffly out of the plane, looking exactly alike.
Look at those men. They were supposed to be inconspicuous.
You ask for plain clothes.
Now in downtown Rome, Joe drives a motor scooter with Anne smiling on the back, her arms wrapped around his waist. They ride toward the Colosseum, an oval amphitheater with a sweeping outer stone wall that has three levels of round arched openings. Later, Joe, Anne, and Irving tour the inside of the Colosseum, walking along the upper level with a guide. The crumbling arches surround each level where only patches of the terraced seating remain. The guide takes Anne aside and points to the floor of the sunny, expansive amphitheater lined with stone corridors. A cigarette dangles from Irving's mouth as he takes a picture of Anne through his lighter. He winks at Joe. Later, Irving drives a small car with a wide open sunroof and speeds by Joe and Anne on their motor scooter. His car veers toward a building as he pokes his head out of the roof and takes a picture of them, then quickly grabs the steering wheel. A traffic officer stands on a platform at an intersection. They stop at the curb and get off. While Joe talks with the officer, Anne holds the motor scooter. She looks over her shoulder at Joe, then down at the motor scooter. Hiding behind a corner, Irving takes a picture as Anne gets on and fiddles with the handlebars. She drives off.
Hey! Excuse me.
Joe dashes after her.
Hey, stop! Come back! You'll be forgiven!
Irving gets in his car. Running, Joe grabs the back of the motor scooter and hops on. Anne makes a fast right turn. She just misses a group of pedestrians on the corner. Joe tries to grab the handlebars. Watching, Irving brings his hand to his mouth as they dodge an oncoming car, then scoot past an oncoming trolley. Following in his convertible, Irving gets sprayed by a water truck. Next, Anne drives through an artist's sidewalk stand. She weaves through a sidewalk cafe, then knocks over a painter's easel. Entering an intersection, she cuts in front of a trolley. A woman hops out of the way as Anne drives around a rotary going the wrong direction. Four policemen climb into a Jeep. Two others hop onto their motorcycles as Anne and Joe whiz by them. Pursued by the police, Anne glances over her shoulder as she speeds down a city street. Later, at the police station, Joe, Irving, Anne, and the victims of her poor driving meet with the police. The artist holds up his torn picture. As an officer takes Anne's arm, Joe passes the police chief a booklet. He looks at a photo of Joe, then reads the cover, American News Service. Joe puts his arm around Anne as Irving talks to the chief. Joe signs a paper. Smiling, the chief waves to the three as they leave. Joe leads Anne out by the arm, nodding in thanks to the witnesses.
I'm going straight from now on.
American News Service? What did he mean?
Well, you know, you say you're with the press, you can get away with anything.
Go to church to get married on a scooter. That's a hot one. Joe's a wonderful liar.
Now, the people leave the station smiling and rush to shake hands with Anne and Joe.
Congratulazioni, bravo.
A stout man grabs Anne by the cheeks and kisses her. Then he gives Joe two quick kisses on his cheeks and shakes Irving's hand.
Joe?
You don't have to look so worried. I won't hold you to it.
Thank you very much.
You don't have to be too grateful.
Okay, I won't.
I'm a good liar too, aren't I, Mr. Bradley?
The best I ever met.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much.
Say, come with me.
They enter a room with a circular 8-foot-high stone of a bearded face.
The mouth of truth. The legend is that if you're given to lying, you put your hand in there, it'll be bitten off.
Oh, the hard idea.
Let's see you do it.
Staring keenly at Joe, she draws a breath and lifts her chin. She looks down at the oval mouth and moves her hand slowly toward the opening. Irving takes a picture with the lighter. Her hand trembles as it moves closer to the mouth, then she snatches it away.
Let's see you do it.
Joe's smile falters.
Sure.
Pressing his lips together, he steps forward and lays his hand on the stone rim of the mouth. As he slides his hand inside, he smiles at Anne. Joe lunges forward, then pulls out his empty sleeve. He reveals his hand.
You heathen!
He hugs her.
Oh,
you better hug your hand. You
okay.
Yes.
All right, let's go. Look out!
Smiling, she runs out of the room, followed by Joe and Irving. Later, Irving drives them in his tiny car.
I'll park in the corner.
Joe stands up in the back seat, leans over, and opens the door for Anne. He looks quizzically at the ground, then pushes the front seat forward and squeezes out the door. Squinting, Anne looks up and down a brick wall where thousands of plaques hang. Nearby, a woman prays at a kneeling bench.
What do they mean, all these inscriptions?
Well, each one represents a wish fulfilled. It all started during the war when there was an air raid, right out here. A man with his four children was caught in the street. They ran over against the wall right there for shelter, prayed for safety. Bombs fell very close, but no one was hurt. Later on, the man came back and he put up the first of these tablets. Since then, it's become a sort of a shrine. People come and whenever their wishes are granted, they put up another one of these little plaques.
Lovely story.
She glances at the kneeler where two people pray.
Read some of the inscriptions.
She moves closer and looks at the plaques, covering the vast wall like tiles. Standing nearby, Irving lights a cigarette. A small leaf-shaped plaque names P.R. Carla and Giorgio.
Make a wish?
She nods.
Tell the doctor?
Anyway, the chances of it being granted are very slight.
Well, what now?
I've heard of a wonderful place for dancing on a boat.
Oh, you mean the barges down by San Angelo?
Yes, couldn't we go there tonight?
Hey, why not?
Well, anything you wish.
And then at midnight, I'll turn into a pumpkin and drive away in my glass slipper.
And that'll be the end of the fairy tale. Well, I guess Irving has to go now.
I do?
Yes, you know, that big business development of yours that you have to attend to.
Oh, the development.
Yes, can't afford not to take care of that.
I'll see you later, Smitty.
Good luck with the big development.
Thanks.
Irving shakes her hand and leaves. Joe looks to the street, then smiles at Anne. She nods. A horse-drawn carriage pulls up and they climb in. Nighttime. Joe and Anne step down a stone staircase that leads to the dance on the barges. While Joe buys the tickets, Anne stares across the Tiber River at St. Angelo's, a huge cylindrical castle. Joe looks over at her as she smiles, watching the dance. They exchange a smile and stroll to the dance floor. Finding a spot on the crowded floor, they dance. Nearby, two dark-suited agents, fedoras low on their brows, grimly survey the crowd. Watching Joe and Anne dance, one of them, with a mustache, rises, then turns to his smug-faced partner.
Krishna Paranoi.
His partner nods and walks off. The mustached man fixes his gaze on Joe and Anne as they dance. Running stiffly, the smug-faced man leaves the riverfront. Dancing, Joe rests his cheek against Anne's hair. As they spin slowly around, Anne smiles into his shoulder, then looks up at him.
Hello.
Hello.
Softly, she lays her forehead against his cheek. He follows her off the dance floor.
Mr. Bradley, if you don't mind my saying so, I think you are a ringer.
Oh, what? Oh, thanks very much.
You spent the whole day doing things I've always wanted to. Why?
I don't know. Seemed the thing to do.
I never heard of anybody so kind.
Wasn't any trouble?
Also, completely unselfish.
Joe's eyes waver.
Let's have a drink at the bar.
He escorts her to the bar where the hairstylist stands, his trim mustache shaved off.
Oh, finalmente! There you are! Scusatemi tanto. I look for you a long time. I think maybe you not come.
Anne points to her upper lip.
Off, all off.
Oh, it's nice without, isn't it? Cool.
Oh, very, very good.
This is Mr. Bradley.
I, Mario Dilani.
Old friends?
Oh, yes, he cut my hair this afternoon. He invited me here tonight.
Well, what did you say the name was?
Dilani, Mario Dilani.
Mario Dilani. I'm very glad to know you.
Me. Oh, may I enjoy myself? The pleasure. You mind?
No, go right ahead.
Thank you.
Anne shifts a chill stare from Joe to Mario, then presses her lips into a smile. While she dances with Mario, Joe writes on a cocktail napkin. Irving arrives. He waves his camera at the ticket booth and strides toward the bar. On the dance floor, Mario twirls Anne. The mustached agent watches.
Ciao, Joe. Did I miss anything?
You're just in time, pal.
Who's Smitty dancing with?
Barbara. Got her hair this afternoon. Made a date for the night.
The princess and the barber.
Anne and Mario laugh as they sashay. Irving sets his camera on the bar in front of Joe, steps behind the bar and adjusts the lens, waving off the bartender. He peers over Joe's shoulder at Anne, then motions Joe aside and snaps a photo. Hiding the camera, Irving grabs his drink. Joe stares at the sky. Anne waves to Irving. He lifts his drink and nods. Now, by St. Angelo's, two sedans drive across a bridge and stop. A trolley drives past as five dark-suited agents climb out of the cars and march staunchly toward the dance. The mustached man watches Anne, lights a cigarette, then glimpses the five men filing down the stairs. One, a square-built man, trips as he turns his head to gawk at two women. Smoking his cigarette, the mustached agent wanders onto the dance floor. Mario stops dancing with Anne.
What is it?
Moment.
Studying Anne, he brings his hand to his chin, then tips her head down. He combs her bangs forward, parts them in the center, then combs each half into a curl on each side. Anne stares bewildered as he touches up her bangs, then runs the comb through his own hair. They dance. As she tries to feel her bangs, he pulls her arm away. Nearby, the square-built agent snaps his fingers to the beat.
All good.
He looks at another agent, then menacingly pulls his hat down and stuffs his hands in his pockets.
Oh. Thank you. Cool enough. Bye.
The mustached agent approaches Anne. She nods, and they dance.
Your Highness.
He holds her tightly.
Dance quietly towards the entrance. There is a car waiting.
No.
Your Highness, please.
You've made a mistake. Non parlo inglese. Let me go. Will you let me go? Mr. Bradley! Let me go, will you, Mr. Bradley?
Joe and Irving race after the two agents gripping Anne's arms. Joe throws the mustached man to the ground, then takes Anne's hand. As they flee, the mustached man springs up and shoves Irving onto a railing. Joe punches two agents, then sprints toward an exit with Anne. They run into another agent. Joe wallops him, then hurls him into the river. Anne tosses him a life ring. An agent yanks Irving's beard. Irving socks him. Mario combs his hair, then tackles an agent sparring with Joe. The band leader conducts as Irving tumbles across the floor. Two men wrench Anne away while another pins Joe against the railing. Mario wrestles off Joe's assailant. Joe bolts after Anne. Irving pushes his way through the crowd carrying his camera. An agent punches Joe, sending him sprawling. Ann cracks a bottle over the agent's head. Joe whacks a man with a chair, then spars with the mustached agent. Ann clubs him with a bottle. Another man attacks Joe. Ann stands on a chair and slams a guitar on the head of the square-built agent.
Hit him again, Smitty!
Irving takes a picture as Ann smacks him again. Two police jeeps pull up and officers swarm toward the party.
Hey, Joe, here are my car keys.
Police. Police.
Up the other side of the bridge.
Ann and Joe take off. Joe shoves an agent on the way out, then sprints through a boathouse holding Ann's hand. They hurry along a narrow dock. A man waits behind the corner. On the barge, police arrest the agents. On the dock, Joe inches toward the corner. When he pokes his head around, the man punches him. Joe falls into the river. As the man grabs Ann, she kicks him, then cuffs him in the face. Holding her nose, she jumps into the river. Back at the dance, police officers haul off the beaten agents. One leads the staggering, square-built man away by the broken guitar around his neck. The crowd of dancers waves goodbye to them. Later, on the other side of the Tiber River, Joe and Ann swim to shore. Joe supports Ann with his arm around her waist as they trudge up the grassy riverbank. Soaking wet and shivering, they sit snugly on a stone bench. Joe puts his arms around Ann and squeezes her close.
All right?
Fine, how are you?
Oh, fine. Say, you know, you were great back there.
You weren't so bad yourself.
Their eyes meet. Joe kisses her. Water streams down their touching faces. Slowly, they pull back, their eyes locked deeply. His soulful gaze lingers as her eyes drift over his face.
I guess we better get Irving's car and get out of here.
Joe supports her as they hurry off. Later, moonlight beams through the open windows of Joe's apartment. In dry clothes, Joe steps out of the closet with his wet pants hanging on the doorknob. He lays his sport coat over a chair, then throws the wet pants into the closet.
This is the American Hour from Rome, continuing our program of musical selections.
Jaw tight, he stares at the bathroom door. Inside, Anne wears a paisley silk robe and studies herself in the mirror. She smooths her hair back and glances at the door. Clasping the robe up to her neck, she enters the room and smiles shyly.
Everything ruined?
No. They'll be dry in a minute.
Suit you. You should always wear my clothes.
Seems I do.
I thought a little wine might be good.
Shall I cook something?
No kitchen. Nothing to cook. I always eat out.
Do you like that?
Well, life isn't always what one likes. Is it?
No, it isn't.
They sip their wine and she sits down.
Tired?
A little.
You've had quite a day.
A wonderful day.
This is the American Hour from Rome, broadcasting a special news bulletin in English and Italian. Tonight there is no further word from the bedside of Princess Anne in Rome, where she was taken ill yesterday on the last leg of her European goodwill tour. This has given rise to rumors that her condition may be serious, which is causing alarm and anxiety among the people in her country. La Principessa Anna.
She turns off the radio.
The news can wait till tomorrow.
Yes.
May I have a little more wine?
He pours her another glass.
I'm sorry I couldn't cook her some dinner.
Did you learn how in school?
I'm a good cook. I could earn my living at it. I can sew, too, and clean a house and iron. I learned to do all those things. I just haven't had the chance to do it for anyone.
Well, looks like I'll have to move. I get myself a place with a kitchen.
She stares at the floor, then turns and looks at Joe.
Yes.
She holds his riveting gaze. Bowing her head, she looks down into her glass, ruffles her tightly pressed lips, and finishes her wine. Looking away, she swallows hard.
I'll have to go now.
She stands motionless. As she walks past Joe, he reaches for her. Pulling her close, he holds her tightly. She squeezes him, closes her eyes, and presses her head against his shoulder.
Yeah. Something that I want to tell you.
No, please. Nothing.
She brushes her lips against his cheek. He kisses her forehead, his brow knit passionately.
Let's go and get dressed.
She touches his arm, then brushes past him. Joe's chest heaves. Hunching his shoulders, he wanders to the chair and puts on his suit coat. Later, in the car, Joe drives sullen-faced. At his side, Anne looks to him, then stares blankly ahead.
Stop at the next corner, please.
The headlights glow as the car rolls down a dark, narrow street. Joe slows down and stops the car. He looks around the corner where a streetlight falls on the massive wrought iron embassy gates.
Here?
Yes.
She glares out the window at the imposing gate.
I have to leave you now.
She stares into her lap. Joe looks down and nods.
I'm going to that corner there and turn. You can stay in the car and drive away. Promise not to watch me go beyond the corner. Just drive away and leave me as I leave you. Say goodbye. Can't think of any words.
Don't try.
A tear glistens on her cheek as she throws her arms around him. He squeezes his eyes shut, holds her close, then nuzzles his lips against her ear. Trailing his lips across her cheek, he kisses her. Frowning mournfully, she presses her cheek against his, then buries her head in his shoulder. Joe nestles his chin against the nape of her neck as she cries and grips the shoulder of his coat. He caresses her hair as she glances aside, sighs, and slowly sits up. Her eyes wet with tears, she looks out the window, then at Joe. They smile tenderly. Dropping her head, her smile falters. She gets out of the car, walks briskly down a dimly lit alley toward the gate, then breaks into a run. She disappears around the corner. Joe's aching eyes glaze over as he stares at the empty alley. Blinking back tears, he presses his lips together, swallows hard, and drops his head. He drives off. Now, Anne stands in her chambers before the ambassador, the general, and the weeping countess.
Your Royal Highness, 24 hours. They can't all be blank.
They are not.
But what explanation am I to offer their majesties?
I was indisposed. I am better.
Ma'am, you must appreciate that I have my duty to perform, just as your Royal Highness has her duty.
Your Excellency, I trust you will not find it necessary to use that word again. Were I not completely aware of my duty to my family and my country, I would not have come back tonight.
They gape at her. Anne stiffens.
Or indeed ever again.
Wearing dressing gowns, the ambassador, countess, and general stand dumbstruck. Anne stares coldly.
Now, since I understand we have a very full schedule today, you have my permission to withdraw.
The ambassador tightens his lips, then bows. The general bows to Anne, then follows the ambassador out. The countess greets a servant at the door.
No milk and crackers.
The countess's smile withers. She passes the tray back to the servant, closing the doors behind her.
That will be all, thank you, countess.
Anne stands motionless, poised. Drawing a breath, the countess curtsies, backs slowly out of the room and closes the doors behind her. Wearing a long velvet robe, Anne stands in the middle of the vast room. She turns her head, then with her shoulders back, walks gracefully to the window, her robe swaying with each measured step. She lays her hand against the glass. Morning in Joe's apartment. Joe sits gazing out the window. He pivots his chair around. He gets up and opens the door to Mr. Hennessy.
Is it true? Did you really get it?
Get what?
The Prince's story, the exclusive. Did you get it?
I didn't get it.
What? But that's impossible.
Never kept a coffee or something?
Joe, you can't hold out on me.
Who's holding out on
you? You are.
What are you talking about?
I know too much. First, you come into my office and ask about an exclusive on the princess. Next, you disappear. Then I get the rumor from my contact at the embassy that the princess isn't sick at all and she's out of the town.
What kind of a newspaper man are you? You believe every two-bit rumor that comes your way?
Yeah, and a lot of other rumors about a shindig on a barge down by the river. And the arrest of 8 Secret Service men from a country which shall be nameless. And then comes the news of the lady's miraculous recovery. It all adds up. And don't think by playing hard to get you to raise the price of that story. A deal's a deal. Now, come on, come on, come on. Where is that story?
I have no story.
Then what was the idea?
Oh! Irving barges in with an envelope.
Man, wait till you see these.
Irving.
Hi, Mr. Hennessy. Oh, you got here at the right
minute.
What are you going to look at?
Joe spills a glass of wine on Irving.
What's the idea?
What do you mean, charging in here and spilling things all over my place?
Who's spilling?
You did. I spoke to you about that once before. Don't you remember?
Joe, look at my pants.
Yeah, you better come in here and dry them off, Irving.
Oh, next to that. Hey, did you tell him about Smitty?
Irving.
Smitty? Oh, Mr.
Irving.
Joe trips him.
There you go again, Irving.
Glaring at Joe from the floor, Irving gets up and smacks him on the shoulder.
Joe.
Yeah, all right, save that till later. You're here early anyway. Why don't you go home and shave?
Shave?
Yeah, or else keep quiet till Mr. Hennessy and I are finished talking.
Hey, what kind of a routine is that? What are you two guys up to? Who's Smitty?
Oh, he's a guy that we met. You wouldn't care for him.
What am I supposed to look at?
No, just a couple of Irving's dames. You wouldn't like him. Maybe you would.
Don't change the subject. When you came back into my office yesterday...
I know. Yesterday at noon, I thought I had a good lead, but I was wrong. That's all there is to it. There is no story.
Irving gapes.
Okay. She's holding the present of you today. Same time, same place. Maybe that's one story you can get. And you owe me $500.
Take it out of my salary. $50 a week.
Don't think I won't.
Hennessy storms out.
Hey, what gives? Have we had a better offer?
Irving, I don't know just how to tell you this, but...
Wait till I sit down.
Well, in regard to the story that goes with these...
Joe hands him the envelope.
There is no story.
Why not?
I mean, not as far as I'm concerned.
Joe pours himself a glass of wine. Irving gapes at him, then looks down, frowning.
Pictures came out pretty well. You want to have a look at them?
Irving pulls the photos out of the envelope and holds one out to Joe.
Huh?
Joe takes the photo and cracks a smile.
How about a blow-up from a negative that size, huh? Yeah.
Irving unrolls a tiny strip of negatives.
Oh. That's the first cigarette, huh?
Oh, yeah, Rokas. Hey, the mouth of truth.
Next, they look at a photo of Mario and Ann dancing.
Oh, you want to know the caption I had in mind there? Barber cuts in. Huh?
Well, here's the one I figured would be the key shot for the whole layout. The wall where wishes come true, hmm?
Joe, that's good. Lead off with that, then follow up with the wishes?
Yeah.
Look at here. I dug that up out of the file. Princess inspects police.
Yeah.
Police inspects princess.
A photo of Ann at the police station.
Pretty good.
Ann smashing the guitar on the agent's head.
Wow!
Is that a shot?
What a picture!
Is that a shot, Joe? Bodyguard gets body blow.
Yeah. No, how about this? Crowned head. Huh?
Oh, I get it. That's... Joe, you got...
Irving frowns as Joe sadly lowers the picture and tosses it down.
She's fair game, Joe. It's always open season on princesses. You must be out of your mind.
Yeah, I know, but... look, I can't prevent you from selling the pictures if you want to. You'll get a good price for them.
Yeah.
Joe throws Irving a sideways glance. Irving collects his pictures.
You going to the interview?
You going?
Yeah, it's an assignment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Irving looks sourly from his wine-stained pants to Joe.
I see.
Joe stares at the door after Irving leaves. Later, a crowd of reporters gathers in a stately embassy hall. Joe and Irving arrive together.
It ain't much, but it's home.
They stroll toward a stage at the far end of the hall where a formally dressed man steps to the edge of the carpeted stairs.
Ladies and gentlemen, please approach.
Numbering about 100, the reporters move to the end of the hall and cluster around the stage. Joe and Irving press their way to the front and stand in the front row behind a rope barrier. Irving carries a large camera and flash. The master of ceremonies steps to the edge of the stage.
Sua Altezza Reale, Her Royal Highness.
He steps aside. Joe draws a deep breath, focusing on the stage. Irving cocks his head, his gaze riveted. From the back corner of the stage, Anne walks out with the ambassador at her side. Joe's mouth relaxes in a thin smile as she approaches a single chair center stage. She wears a white ankle-length dress with a chic crescent-shaped hat over her short hair.
Your Royal Highness, the ladies and gentlemen of the press.
Anne smiles respectfully and nods, surveying the crowd. Her eyes stop as she catches Joe's stare. Stunned, her smile fades and her gaze drifts to the floor. Gathering the skirt of her white gown, she sits. Her eyes dart to Joe. She looks from his warm smile and musters a nod to the Master of Ceremonies.
Ladies and gentlemen, Her Royal Highness will now answer your questions.
I believe at the outset, Your Highness, that I should express the pleasure of all of us at your recovery from the recent illness.
Thank you.
Does Your Highness believe that federation would be a possible solution to Europe's economic problems?
I am in favor of any measure which would lead to closer cooperation in Europe.
And what, in the opinion of Your Highness, is the outlook for friendship among nations?
I have every faith in it, as I have faith in relations between people.
She glances at Joe.
May I say, speaking for my own press service, we believe that Your Highness's faith will not be unjustified.
I am so glad to hear you say it.
Which of the cities visited did Your Highness enjoy the most?
Locked in an adoring stare with Joe, Anne sits motionless. The ambassador leans over.
Each in its own way was unforgettable. It would be difficult to... Rome. By all means, Rome. I will cherish my visit here in memory as long as I live.
She looks into Joe's eyes with a soulful stare, her lip trembling.
Despite your indisposition, Your Highness?
Despite that.
Photographs may now be taken.
As photographers cluster around Anne, Irving joins them. Joe's eyes brim with tears. Anne stands and steps to the edge of the stage, smiling. Irving pulls the lighter out of his pocket and takes a picture of Anne. Her smile falters and she glances to Joe. Irving gives her a sly smile and slides the lighter into his pocket. Joe chuckles. The photographers return to their places.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much.
I would now like to meet some of the ladies and gentlemen of the press.
Anne's assistants exchange nervous glances as Anne moves forward. The Countess and the General follow her. She stops, glancing behind her. Smiling, she continues walking while the Countess and the General wait on the stage. She greets the front row of reporters.
Hitchcock, Chicago Daily News.
I'm so happy to see you.
She shakes his hand and moves down the row.
Scanziani, de la Suisse.
Joe and Irving wait at the end of the line.
Klinger, Deutsche Presseagentur.
Gordon Sear.
Maurice Montabré, Le Figaro.
Sietske Galema, De Linie Amsterdam.
Dag mevrouw.
Jacques Ferrier, ici Paris.
Enchanté.
Gross, Davar Tel Aviv.
Irving glances at Joe as she gets closer.
Cortés Cabanillas, ABC Madrid.
Encantada.
Lampe, New York Herald Tribune.
Good afternoon.
Irving Radovich, CR Photo Service.
How'd you do?
May I present, Your Highness, with some commemorative photos of your visit to Rome?
Anne looks at the photo of herself hitting the man with the guitar and hints at a smile.
Thank you so very much.
Looking at Joe, she meets his eyes with a deep stare.
Joe Bradley, American News Service.
She shakes his hand.
So happy, Mr. Bradley.
Her gaze drifts to the man next in line.
Moriones, La Vanguardia de Barcelona.
She continues on, smiling.
Stephen House of the London Exchange Telegraph.
Good afternoon.
Garde des Sceaux, Agence Presse.
She shakes the reporter's hand. Joe's gaze follows Anne as she slowly turns from the crowd, head bowed, and walks toward the stage. Staring at the floor, she climbs the carpeted stairs. With her back to the crowd, she stares downward, composes herself, then turns to face them. Tears glisten in her eyes as she beams a wide smile and scans the crowd, her gaze lingering on Joe. He smiles back at her and nods, his brow twitching. Her smile softens, starts to falter, then she strengthens and looks away. She walks toward the back of the stage, followed by her entourage. Joe steadfastly watches her leave. The crowd disperses, filing out of the stately hall. Irving glances from Joe to the stage, then leaves. Joe stands numb, his steady gaze locked on the empty stage. Shifting his weight, Joe puts his hands in his pockets and turns away. Somber, he strides past embassy guards standing beside the polished marble columns in the vast hall. Staring blankly ahead, he walks steadily. A faint smile grazes his solemn face. Raising an eyebrow, Joe's smile grows, then fades into a deep sigh. He slows his pace. His mouth draws tight. He stops, pivots slowly around, and looks down the long hall at the lone chair, center stage. Clenching his jaw, Joe walks on. Titles appear. The end. A logo. A Paramount picture. This program has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Samantha Manahan. Descriptions read by Rena Baskin. Funding provided by the United States Department of Education. For more information, call DVS toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org.